The Round Table of Justice.
Welcome to Monday morning, 10 o'clock, the Round Table of Justice. Every Monday we do this. We, at 10 o'clock, we stop down for an hour and we talk about a variety of different topics. It's usually something to do with justice, with community safety. Given the fact that this is Mental Health Month, the whole month of May, and we've had a number of guests on to talk about mental health in a variety of ways, and sometimes very specific to, for example, farming. We've talked about that. We've talked about it with students. We've come at it from a variety of different angles. This is an important one when we talk about mental health for first responders, because we think about the crisis that we see in our community. How often are you and I talking about mental health crisis, the drug problems in our community? And those types of things manifest themselves in many ways. And often, sadly, they materialize to be very tragic. They could be suicides. They could be violent assaults. A variety of things that someone sees happen, picks up the phone, makes a phone call, and then a number of people respond. Those people that respond to those calls, that may be a once in a lifetime for the citizen who's reporting it, this may be the fifth time in the shift that they're seeing that type of violence, aggression, or tragedy. And so when you think about mental health and you think about it from the perspective of our first responders, this is something that I'm happy to say is gaining momentum. We are seeing more and more initiatives in place to try and take care of the mental health and wellness of our first responders. But it's a challenge, and it's a challenge for some very distinct reasons. And the guests that I have on the show today will be able to talk about that quite eloquently. I've got three great guests, and I'm happy to introduce all three of them to you now. Will join us for the next hour. I'm going to start with Derek Shenko. Derek has been on this program before. He's the Chief Mental Health Officer and CEO of Diversified Rehabilitation Group. And Derek, happy to have you back on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Steve Farina is also joining me by phone. He's a firefighter and Executive Vice President of the BC Professional Firefighters Association. Steve, thanks for giving us the time this morning.
My pleasure.
And joining us in studio is Casey Ward. Casey's a Staff Sergeant with the Regina Police Service, also President of the Saskatchewan Federation of Police Officers. Casey, thank you for being here.
Good morning, Evan.
So let's talk about the passion, because each of you has a strong passion for taking care of the mental health of people in your profession. Casey, I'll start with you. Where does that passion come from? Why is this an important issue for you as a leader?
You know, I've had an amazing 25-year career, and through my career, I saw a lot of people that were, you know, suffering, having problems with a lot of calls for service. And even myself, I was diagnosed with PTSD in 2021 from events that happened in 2004. So for 15 years, I suffered in silence, not wanting to talk about, you know, these traumatic events. And I always wanted to have other people not feel the way I felt. So working with the Canadian Institute of Public Safety Research and Treatment and a lot of other great organizations to bring leading research and treatment to public safety personnel across Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you, I know, have been a great leader. In fact, that CIPSRT conference that you were just talking about, the acronym Canadian
Institute for Public Safety Research and Treatment.
Right. That CIPSRT conference just happened at the beginning of this month, and there were hundreds of people there from all over Canada taking part in that. And I know you chair that committee, so I appreciate the work you do. Maybe, Derek, I'll come over to you. What is it for you that got you interested in and kind of lit your passion when it comes to mental wellness for first responders?
Well, I always was eager to help others. My own journey in 1993, I suffered a work-related injury, which left me not only with physical, but also with psychological condition, which today we call PTSD. I wasn't aware what it was, but as a grown man, I would bed not by choice, but by the exhaustion of sleep, not being sleep deprived. And then I progressed to the journey of exactly what I'm doing, helping people as a vocational rehabilitation consultant and then as a clinician in the mental health world, working with first responders. And back then I realized that we must be doing a better job to be there for this crowd. And from then, I started moving forward, and here we are today. Mm-hmm. I'm working specifically with first responders.
Your organization, the Diversified Rehabilitation Group, you work with all first responders. Do you particularly focus on one profession, or who are some of the people that you help through your work?
We help traditional definition of first responders, firefighters, correctional officers, police officers, nurses, and also those who are not classified as the first responders but do the first responders job. One of them would be human trafficking individuals.
And
we also work with veterans as well.
Right, good stuff. The firefighters that are represented by Steve Farina are represented well. Steve, I've heard you talk in a couple of different video interviews. Steve, the executive vice president of the BC Professional Firefighters Association, give us some thoughts as to why this is important for you as a leader, and why this is part of the platform that you continually focus on improving.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. You know, what got me into this was two back-to-back suicides within 7 weeks apart in a BC fire department, and that shook us to our core. And that kind of propelled me into this mental health world where we wanted to bring it out of the shadows and really shine a light on it. And that's been my passion since then. And, you know, that was 2015. And, you know, we've been fighting the fight ever since, trying to create presumptive legislation, provide resources and programming to support not only our first responders, but our first responder families as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we've been doing.
That's a very good point, the first responder families. And I want to talk about that in a little bit. Casey, maybe I'll come back to you, because I feel as though this is true in many of these first responder professions. There's this do what you got to do to get the job done mentality. And I think through the years, that is something that is hard to fight against. So it's suck it up. Get back out there, do your job. This is part of the job. You knew what you were signing up for. How have you found balancing this notion of taking care of people's mental health and wellness versus that what I'll call old school mentality about suck it up, get back out there, there's more calls waiting?
Well, you know, even this morning, one of our supervisors went to a death, and it's a death of one of his friends that he went to high school with. And that officer right now has to investigate that death, has to go notify family members. But when does he ever get to take care of himself? Because after that call, he's going to have to go on to many other calls during the day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing, you know, society wants us out there protecting and helping, but we need the time to take care of and help ourselves. So, you know, throughout our careers, we go to so many traumatic events, and it's just easy to kind of just forget about those things, not think about them. But we need to deal with those things and help, because if we're not healthy, then how can we actually help other people?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what the rates are of people that are struggling with occupational stress injuries, Steve, in firefighting? I know you represent BC firefighters, but I'm sure this is something that colleagues across Canada are advocating for. Does this continue to be a significant problem?
Oh, absolutely. And now you mentioned SIPSR. You know, Nick Carlton and the team did some research back in 2017, and they said over 40% of first responders are exhibiting some signs of post-traumatic stress injury. And I think that is an underreported number across Canada. People are suffering, and, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of people that have a ton of shame, a ton of stigma around reaching out for help. And I think those numbers are a lot higher.
Well, what do you think it is, Steve, that drives those numbers? Is it the nature of the work? Is it a big call that has tragic consequences? Is it the accumulation of calls over a career?
It's all of those things. I would say it's an accumulation, but you've got to remember, first responders are human beings, and they bring in childhood experiences, they bring in their relationships, they bring in their family stuff into work, and you add on top of all of those rocks that you put into a backpack through life, of the traumatic calls that Casey was talking about, dealing with the families, dealing with those interpersonal connections, and the impact of service is real. And if you do not take out those rocks and examine them and get treatment and have a mental health professional, you know, help you sort that stuff out, it's going to take you out at the knees. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing, is people push it down. They wait way too long to reach out for help. And by the time they come to us and to Derek, it's a huge ball of yarn that we've got to untangle. And that's mm-hmm. the unfortunate thing. We need people reaching out earlier.
We're going to take our first break, but when we come back, this is a very individual journey for people, and the things that can cause crisis can vary. And I want to talk with our three professionals about some of the stories that they've encountered as they try and help colleagues across Canada. We'll talk about, is there a way we can preemptively prevent this from happening in people through our recruiting processes, and then what we need to do to build mental wellness into the workplace today on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Today on the Roundtable of Justice, three great guests and leaders that are talking about the importance of mental wellness amongst first responders. May is Mental Health Month, and I've got joining us on the show today Casey Ward, president of the Saskatchewan Federation of Police Officers, Mr. Derek Shenko, who is chief mental health officer and CEO of Diversified Rehabilitation Group, who do work with first responders from across Canada, and Steve Farina, who is a firefighter and executive vice president of the BC Professional Firefighters Association. I'm wondering, Steve, if you can share with us, and I'll get our other two panelists to do this as well, some stories of people that you have worked with, whether you've actually operationally, personally worked with them, or just other firefighters through your leadership role that have come forward to share their story about how mental health and mental wellness has been impacted in their role as a first responder, Steve.
Yeah, I've worked with people across Canada, in fact, but largely in BC, as you mentioned. It's interesting. It takes a lot of courage for people to reach out. And as I mentioned earlier, they sometimes wait too long. And when they finally do, and they kind of, you know, go after that help that they so desperately need, if the organization itself isn't there to support them, it creates this organizational stress piece or sanctuary trauma where the place that's supposed to keep them safe when they're out there protecting the public, it can unhinge them. And I don't know any other way to say this, is that it actually creates more trauma than actually seeing the trauma calls. And so I've seen examples of this where someone puts their hand up for help, they go through the workers' comp system, they get treatment, but they go back into a toxic work environment where they are not seen and heard, they're not supported, and the shame is reinforced. But I've also seen the other side where organizations welcome them with open arms, they see them and hear them and support them and help them with that transition back to health. And then they come back and they are ready to fight again. And mm-hmm. I think that's what is missing, is that there needs to be more supportive organizations moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what I'm hearing you say is it may be the nature of the operational work, the job that they do, that cause them the mental health issue. But how the workplace deals with it, what you're saying, Steve, can exacerbate it or really give them a leg up in getting healthy.
Absolutely. It could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, that organizational piece, because it is the accumulation of calls. But that sanctuary trauma piece, I'm finding, is the straw that breaks the camel's back. And that's what we need to fix.
Derek, Sure. Derek, when I had you on the show last time, you talked about it from the standpoint of a moral injury. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, but before I do that, if I can just add something to what Steve was saying, there's also a component when the individual goes off work because they are suffering different conditions, in this case, mental health condition. And when they make that step forward to get help, and sometimes the system puts so many obstacles for them to receive that help. To almost like they have to prove that they are not well. And I think we also can do a better job in this area in allowing us, ourselves, and professionally looking from the perspective, what can we do to be more for those responders when they are reaching out for help and offer that support to them more effectively. Mm-hmm. From the moral injury perspective, to Steve's point, when the organization is not there for the individual. And that's a very common one. It's a silent killer, as how I call this, is because frequently that lack of support from the organization creates a moral injury. The individuals feel betrayed that the organization is not there for them. I can give you an example of where without disclosing any names, a police officer who was involved in shooting and then become a subject officer. Obviously, at that point, their investigation needs to take place, and they need to follow procedure by taking their gun and badge and all of those things that need to take place. Very often, what we are still seeing today is that leaders who are involved in protecting their staff members and that police officers frequently withdraw and don't offer that emotional support. There's nothing that stops them from saying, you know what, I understand that you're going through a difficult time. Yes, we need to go through this investigation, but I have your back. I'm here for you. Or even when that happens and there's media involved, there's nothing that's stopping leaders from saying, I understand we need to go through the investigation, but I know my staff are there to protect the public, and I have their back and support them. Be a human being to those who are there to protect us, and specifically from the leadership perspective, be that authentic leader, not a transactional leader. Authentic meaning, I'm there for you, I will support you. Transactional leader meaning, here's the job, this is your job, and suck it up, buttercup.
Mm-hmm. We're hearing things like moral injury, sanctuary trauma. Casey, you've been dealing with this for a number of years, trying to help police officers throughout the entire province and the country for that matter. What are some of the ways in which you've seen this manifest in professionals in the policing world?
You know, a lot of times people end up thinking they are having a medical issue. We had one of our officers with our canine unit go into 100 high-risk calls. And it got to the point, and every time we go to a call, our dispatchers kind of like a sound that comes over. Well, it got to the point, every time he heard this sound, he was having a physical reaction, almost like he's having a heart attack, almost like a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And his body was basically reacting, telling him, you can't do this anymore. So there's so many things that even your body that you can't control that you deal with. And, you know, talking to a lot of our members, one of the big things that happens is, you know, a lot of organizations are doing good, but it's also the self-stigma because we put on the uniform and we're out there protecting others. But even through my journey, I was always worried about telling people, thinking that they might take away my firearm or people would think less of me. And it was actually the opposite. Our members were so supportive when they heard what I was going through. And talking to our other members, a lot of them have come forward and said the same thing. Our membership does a great job. They understand that you're dealing with these traumatic events that we're all going through, and the support was phenomenal through my organization.
Mm-hmm. The number of ways that this can manifest itself. I've talked to colleagues, friends of mine that have gone through their own individual journey, and sometimes it can be one call, but sometimes it's almost the silent build, right, Casey? Like you don't, for many people, they don't even realize that it's happening. And it's just, like you said, with the canine officer, and maybe you've got other examples of people and how they're affected through this.
Yeah, even for my own personal one, one of my, you know, bigger calls was 2004, but it was a bunch of suicides throughout my career. So actually it was about 2010. Every person that I went to that's deceased would come back to me in the middle of the night in nightmares. So from about 2010 to 2021, every dead person, if you think in policing itself, you know, every car accident, any sudden death, we go to a lot of deaths. Well, every time someone would come back in the middle of the night in my nightmares for 2 or 3 days later. Boy. And when I brought this up, you know, I thought I was alone, and I thought, this is weird. It's just happened to me. The more people have actually told my story, so many people have come up to me and said, you too, that happens to you too. Mm-hmm. So you're not alone out there. Yeah? We're all going through these things, and, you know, was able to get help and, work in a 25-year career.
Yeah. We're going to take another break, but where I want to go when we come back is how do we do this? If people are identified to have, whether it's PTSD or some sort of occupational stress injury, how do we get them on a path to wellness while putting them back in that same work environment? Is that possible? And as I mentioned earlier, is there any way in our recruiting process we can help identify vulnerable people and maybe set them up for better success? We'll talk about that with our professionals when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us today on the Roundtable of Justice, we're talking about the importance of mental wellness for first responders. And gosh, I got to tell you, I'm so appreciative of the three great guests that I've got joining me on the show. Derek Shanko is with us by phone. He's the chief mental health officer and CEO of Diversified Rehabilitation Group. I've got Steve Farina, I'm reading my own writing and I'm having trouble with it. Steve Farina's firefighter, executive vice president of the BC Professional Firefighters Association. And Casey Ward is president of the Saskatchewan Federation of Police Officers. I'm curious, how do we, and Steve, maybe I'll start with you on this one. How do we find a way where we are helping people get healthy? So let's take a firefighter in BC who has found the strength through support of coworkers or family to put his or her hand up, say, I need some help, and is in the middle of getting help with mental wellness. And yet when we know they come back to work, they're going to be put right back into the situation, which over time has caused the traumatic impact and effect in the first place. How do we do that? How do we guard against a relapse for people? Have you got some thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It starts with a psychologically safe workplace. So a non-toxic workplace where you don't have that sanctuary trauma or that moral injury that Derek talks about. That's the basis of this, is having emotionally intelligent leadership. You have good, strong peers that can see and hear people when they come back and support people and meet them where they're at. And that's how you, it's a known hazard. The job, you're going to see stuff again. You're going to be thrown back into the fire. And that's just the nature of our business. So it is a known hazard. But what we can control is the supports when you get back to the station, you know, back to the hall. That's where the magic happens, is when you can offload, feel safe, and really work on your resilience and bounce back. And the impact of the calls is always going to be there. There's always impact of service. But to have a safe place to come back to and be supported, that's the key, in my opinion.
Derek, you do work with first responders through your team at Diversified Rehabilitation Group. How do you, through the work that you do to help people return to work, how do you build that resilience in them to keep them healthy for the journey going forward?
Well, the first one is to really try to open them up when it comes to vulnerability, because vulnerability is something that, shame on vulnerability, it's something that first responders are actually not really good at when it comes to opening up. And how do we help them? It's to understand they need to look after themselves and give them the tools to address that. What would be beautiful to have is that we start at the point of recruitment or when we are bringing them on board, to explaining and teaching them what mental health is and how to protect themselves from occupational stress injuries and how to address them as they go through the journey of their work. But also when they are at work, it would be very important for us to have almost a mandatory thing that after, let's say, they go back after they are able to qualify to do their first responder job, to have them like a refresher on mental health. And then every 2 or 5 years, again, keep doing this on a regular basis. What we are frequently seeing when people come to our treatment, and then when they get better, they reach out from time to time, says, what can I do to support myself? And having that continuum and being able to have support network that is also not only at work, but also outside work environment, people who understand them, that they can relate, and they have good support network in place, including, I call this, having a psychologist or a clinical counselor, not at the moment when you are already in a red zone, but having that individual that you can do on and see that person on an individual basis, on the maintenance basis. The same way as you will change the oil in the car. Don't wait till the engine blows up. Go there on a regular basis to prevent yourself from going into this red zone.
Derek Shanko is one of my guests. He is the CEO of Diversified Rehabilitation Group. I've actually heard it said before that it's no different than going to the gym. You go to the gym to keep yourself physically fit and healthy. There are things you can do, and you can do them right from the start, or you can pick up in the middle of your career if that's what a lot of people need to do to try and keep themselves healthy from a mental health perspective. So, Casey, I'm curious to know, recruiting plays such an important role in all emergency responders. You look at it through the policing lens. When we recruit, we're looking for the right type of people. Is there more that needs to be done on that front end to help people identify the type of work they're stepping into and finding a way to keep them healthy and resilient through their career?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two points to that. I remember having a chief saying one time to me, are we hiring people that are broken? And Doc Carlton did some amazing research showing that, with most public safety personnel, it's so hard to get on, between polygraphs, multiple interviews. We're hiring really, really good people with really, really strong mental health. It's just that through the trauma in the job, it tends to break them. So we are hiring the right people. What we just need to continue to do is help those people along those careers. And I think the other thing too is, a lot of times when we're recruiting, we're showing all the glory stuff. We're showing people rappelling out of a helicopter or being a pilot or, being, a canine officer. They're not really showing a lot of times what really happens with the job. Going daily to, sudden deaths where people have passed away or bad car accidents. So it's tough because we want to recruit people and, your recruiting pitch can't be, you're come to this job, you're going to have a lot of trauma and maybe have some mental health issues. But I think we do need to tell people what this job really entails, and especially when they get hired, when they're starting through that, police college, is show them, give them the information and the tools to deal with this stressful job.
The number of people that put their hand up and say, I need help, is probably much smaller than we would like it to be. But I also know there are many times where peers, coworkers, and family members might identify some signs, some things. Have you had that conversation much, Casey, in terms of red flags that might manifest themselves so that people around the individual who needs help could help facilitate that next step?
Yeah, families is so important. And, a lot of times it's actually the families and your friends that see it first. So, different things like Road to Mental Readiness, R2MR. I know we did a unique thing in Regina when you were chief, where we actually had, we rented out a movie theater and had families come and our EFA people talk for 5 minutes about resources. And then we gave everyone the chance to watch a movie with free popcorn and drinks. So families usually see it first. They see their spouse starting to be irritable, snapping for no reason, being withdrawn. But a lot of times they don't know what to do at that point. So providing not just only the officers, but their family members. I know at the SAS Police College, we were doing a 6-segment with the new recruits talking about mental health. And one of the segments we did was actually have all the spouses and families could come online and talk about their career and what happens if they see their spouse, starting to have some of these symptoms, how they can reach out, not only for that person, but for themselves.
Mm-hmm. What about peers, Steve? How important are peers in the discussion of mental wellness?
Absolutely critical, supporting your coworkers through just life and the work stuff. And that is like kind of a first line of defense. But it's not just that formalized peer groups, it's everyone can be a peer. So everyone should be looking out for each other. If we think of this as a first responder family, we need to have each other's back, like Derek said. And that peer group is a connection to resources. They're not counselors, but they're people with shared and lived experience that can actually identify things, go for a walk and talk, connect you to resources, and help you on a return to work basis as well. Or reach out when you're off, whether it's a physical injury or a psychological injury. And that connection is absolutely critical to keep people connected. And, so they don't withdraw and we've got eyes on everybody. So I think that peer network is really, really critical for, positive mental health in the workplace.
Steve Farina, Casey Ward, Derek Shanko, my three guests, will take our last break. When we come back, I'm looking to hear from each of you some closing comments, some success stories or positive changes that you've witnessed in your leadership journey on this topic, and what advice you have for first responders listening today who might be hesitant to seek help. We'll finish off with today's Roundtable of Justice and our three professionals when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
been a great discussion today on the Roundtable of Justice, talking about mental wellness for first responders. I've got Casey Ward, president of the Saskatchewan Federation of Police Officers, Steve Farina, firefighter and executive vice president of the BC Professional Firefighters Association, and Mr. Derek Shenko, chief mental health officer and CEO of Diversified Rehabilitation Groups. Maybe, Derek, I'll start with you. Have you got any success stories? I know we've got some real positive success stories out there in Canada. Can you share someone or a story of someone that you've worked with and what that reintegration back into work has looked like?
Of course, I have so many of them, but one comes to mind that's the police officer who came to us, was very hesitant to come, very scared about taking that journey upon himself. But when he entered the program, he said, "This is my last stop." And what do you mean by that? He says, "No, I'm done. I'm so exhausted emotionally. I don't even know where to start. My wife tells me that I'm numb. My relationship is falling apart." So he goes through the program, a really hard time embracing the concepts of how to be good to himself, how to take care of himself. And finally, he goes through the program, finishes the program, and at the end of the program, he said, "I thought that the 5 weeks that I was asked to come here is going to be five long weeks. Actually, it went quite quickly, and the things that I learned helped me to feel again. Something that I didn't have in me for the past 5 or 6 years." Hmm. So he goes home, try to take care of himself again through the journey, return to work, gradually return to work, reconnected with his wife. His marriage was safe. They went into couples counseling together, actually through us as well. And about 2 years post, we'll stay in touch with him, of course, but 2 years post, he called us with his wife and says, "You saved our lives."
Wow.
I know now how to look after myself. It's not easy, but the connection that I have with peers, the people that I met in the program, I'm still staying in touch with them. We both go to couples counseling on a regular basis. I go to my own individual counseling to stay well. Things that I learned in the program, how to process all of that stuff that it's put at me at work. Now I'm no longer in a red zone. Mm-hmm. I'm way in the furthest I go to the orange zone, where I know that things are not well, and I go there to reach out for help.
Very powerful.
So he concluded this. You saved my life.
That's very powerful stuff. Steve, how about you? Some of the people that you've worked with and advocated for, some success stories?
As Derek says, there's a lot. The ones that I love the best are the ones that are people are off for 1 or 2 years. They come back and they are a new human being and they have new hope. And the ones that are staying at work and getting support and then continue on, that's where I see the success. And it's when they actually reach out for help, mm-hmm. we can resource them. So yeah.
You, Casey, are a living success story, but there are lots of people that you would have seen, friends, coworkers of yours that have had great success in that return back to a great career.
Yeah, it's funny. It's usually even not them. It's their family members coming up and saying, "Thanks, you know, we have our mom and dad back, or mm-hmm. our husband and wife," and seeing the families, because that's where it really does affect. So hearing that from them, that's what makes this all worthwhile.
Yeah, for sure. We only have got about a minute and a half left. If I give each of you 30 seconds, I'm curious to know two things that you can comment on, one or both, but you've got a short period of time. Number one, if you could change one thing to make it better, what would it be? And number two, what advice do you have for first responders? Steve, I'll start with you.
Extended health benefits that are adequate for mental health resources. That's number one. And then education and awareness right out of the gate, from recruitment to retirement. They have to be educated on how to take care of themselves. You can't give from an empty cup.
Derek?
Provide extended benefits to family members for first responders. and also create benefits for first responders past retirement, because mm-hmm. currently there's very little accepted RCMP officers who retired. They are entitled to benefits through Veterans Affairs. Those who retire from first responder profession in other areas, they don't have that.
Good stuff. And if you had a message, Derek, for first responders listening today?
Remember, you are not alone. What happened to you is not your fault. You are not broken. You got injured, and we are here to help you.
Okay.
Help is there.
Good stuff. I'll turn it over to Casey Ward for last word. If you could make a change in the system, what would it be? And thoughts to first responders listening?
I think even just the access to care. You know, even during our conference, we couldn't have a lot of clinicians couldn't come because they're just so busy. So the training and education of trauma-informed psychologists. And the last thing is, you know, if you need help, reach out. It isn't easy, but it does get better. And there's a lot of great testimonies, even myself. It does get better and people will support you.
Mm-hmm. Boy, this has been a great chat. Very much appreciate Derek Shenko. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Steve Farina, great to have you on the program. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Evan.
And Casey Ward, thanks for popping into the studio again. Appreciate the leadership all three of you have demonstrated on this.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for bringing up this very important topic to all of us.
Today, it is the Roundtable of Justice today, focusing on mental health and wellness. And by the way, I saw in the text line, someone said I only caught the last little bit of it. You can always listen to the replay of the entire segment through our webpage or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.